Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
Your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, I've always wanted this coach on my show. I almost feel that I'm not doing him right by calling him a coach. I'd rather call him a professor. But when you look at the martial way, the walk in the sport, this man has conducted himself with the greatest integrity, and he's been in the sport for quite a long time. You know, it's humbling for me to have people like this on the show because it truly shows that there's an aspect of the sport that is defined and willing to share their knowledge. And with that being said, welcome Coach Colin Oyama to the show. How you doing, Coach?
Good, man. Trying to stay warm in California.
I'm in the Midwest, man. We're freezing.
Yeah, I hear you guys. Hey, it rains a little bit here, and, you know, we start to panic.
Yeah. Well, I'm originally from Sacramento, so, and then kind of moved down that way where you're at and then made my way out here. You know, Coach, you're considered a legendary MMA coach, but one thing that I think I wanted you on the show for, because you rebuilt your passion with Hungry Fighters. What was the intent in the rebuilding of you, Coach, and what made you take that path and wanting to rebuild Hungry Fighters and get them on the proper aspect of the sport?
I think about 3 or 4 years ago, some of the agents that I deal with, I told them, like, I think I'm done. Kind of lost the fun in it, man. I think training became a babysitting session. I don't do well with that. Like, if I got to call you, like, hey, where you at? Or, you know, you should be in the gym. That's not my thing, man. Like, you know, if my dream is bigger than yours, hey, I'm not your guy. So I think it reached a certain point where it's like, I think I thought it ran its course, you know. But then one of the agents dropped off one more kid. He was from Northern California, you know, the son of migrant farm workers, you know, one of 9 kids, you know, those type of deals. And he was pretty raw, but, you know, it's like he was a hard worker. The guy showed up every day. So you're like, all right, well, shit, I guess I'm stuck with this guy. So let's see what he turns into. And, you know, I think that single fighter with that attitude was what, you know, made me rethink about, you know, hey, man, maybe it's not me. Maybe it's the idiots that are around me, and it's like, hey, if I get more guys like this guy, maybe I can get the love for this thing back, you know?
Yeah. You know, I truly understand
that.
For me. Yeah. You know, that's a tremendous catalyst, too, because I feel that plight. You know, I used to manage fighters, but I'm an active photographer, and I have been for 23 years in this industry. I've been doing journalism for about 15 years now, and I know that feeling of, you know, am I doing enough? Am I making it enough difference? You know, let's kind of take it back just a little bit, because, you know, you were involved with football and all different other aspects. What initially in the heart of you, Coach, that truly made you decide that you were going to define one passion and create greatness in the sport?
I'm not sure. I think, honestly, I was going to law school. Needed something to something else to do after college. I didn't play football anymore. I wasn't, you know, good enough to play in the NFL, you know, obviously. So I ended up watching some Muay Thai fights and figured out, yeah, that looked like something fun, you know. So I started doing that. Started doing some amateur stuff. And I trained with a guy named Crew Rex, who's a pretty well-known guy out in California. And kind of doubled that up, you know. Went to law school and started training Muay Thai with him and did some amateur stuff for him. And then he kind of got me into helping him coach some of the guys there. And so I kind of did that on the side, just you know, out of respect to him. And passed my bar exam and figured, you know, that would be it with the fight thing and on the legal career. But I don't know, things have a funny way of working out. And next thing you know, you're kind of stuck in the middle of training fighters. So I'm not really sure if it was a great calling or anything, but somehow I ended up in it. When you kind of get in it, I'm a competitive person, so it's like, well, I got this guy. You know, I wanted to do well. And, my first guy was Rob McCullough, so it was an interesting time in my life, that's for sure. But 22 years later, I'm still doing it, so I guess it was the right choice, right?
Yes, sir. You know, Coach, it intrigues me because, you know, you look at today's, I call them theatrics of the sport, comparative to the sport when we got in it. You know, it's made a major transition from the sport that we loved and truly defined us and defined the fighters that were in it to this entertainment aspect. How perplexing is that to a coach like yourself trying to keep not just yourself in tune, but your fighters on track and not get that mentality of the new era of the sport?
I mean, there's good and bad. I think at the same time, you know, if the sport doesn't have an entertainment factor, then the payouts aren't as good. You know, you look at the NBA and stuff. Once they started to get some flashier players, I mean, salaries went up. So I understand from a fight perspective, I mean, you know, you need certain types of individuals that can hopefully, you know, up the pay for the average fighters in the sport. But as far as, you know, guys getting big-headed or getting so caught up and stuff, we always laugh here. I know in Orange County especially it's pretty bad sometimes, but you got amateur guys coming up, guys with no fights, you know, talking about their sponsors and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, you got zero fights. Are you worried about, you know, these guys paying them? You know, it's like, focus on basic things first. Let's just see if you even got the goods, you know. But the way I dealt with it is I just cleaned house, man. I got rid of all the people that I just thought, yeah, you know what, man, you're just not my type. I'm sorry. Like I said, I'm not a babysitter. I feel like I got to babysit you. So I feel like I got to beg you to come to the gym. Hey, this ain't working out. And I basically found a bunch of guys that want to be here, that are motivated to be here. And we searched far and wide. I've never recruited fighters until 3 years ago. That's after I got that first kid from up north. That's the first time where I said, you know what, man, I'm not going to just take what comes into the doors. I'm going to actually look for people that fit my personality and fit the way I want to do things. And it's worked out like a charm, man. That's actually been the key to keeping these guys in line, is that I got guys that have like-minded attitudes with me, and it's worked out great, actually.
You know, that's a tremendous aspect to you, you know, because what you're doing in the sport and what you're creating in the sport is tremendous. You know, I interviewed the first woman inductee as a crew into Muay Thai in Thailand, Crew Yawadi Hurst. And her father was a monk. And, of course, over there, they don't believe their daughters or their wives or anybody in that aspect, you know, should work. But she didn't let that deter her. You know, she came on my show and she talked about when she needed, you know, shoes for school, she would go and fight. When they needed food, she would go and fight. And to be the youngest woman ever inducted as a crew over there in Thailand was the most tremendous feeling for her. And on her father's deathbed, you know, she went up to him and she was telling him she loved him. And he said, I want you to teach me Muay Thai. What was it about you, Coach, that inspired you to want to teach Muay Thai?
In the beginning, it was just something fun for me, you know. It was an alternative from football, something different. It was new to me as well, so, you know, about 6 years in, it was still fun for me. You know, other guys wanted to do it, so I started showing them stuff. I needed a part-time job, so when I was in law school, so I started working at a gym, and, you know, somewhere along the line, you kind of, like, want to show people things, and as it got more competitive and it got more into the competition aspect of it, it definitely got more exciting that way because of the competition. Don't get me wrong. I still, you know, I don't mind teaching people just for fun too, but when there's a competitive aspect to it, it does get my attention more just because there's more at stake, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot at stake. You know, I look at life, you know, first and foremost, my show is way laid back. It's chill. Actually, the fighters have named my show The Fighter's Voice. You know, I'm growing gracefully, and I'm honored for that because I let the fighters come on and share who they are. There's not going to be any drama or any questions thrown at you that you won't answer. You know, but what I find tremendous about you is that the closer-knit aspect of how you defined your gym truly made your love grow for the sport. Would you say that's a fair analogy?
I think we push a team concept. I mean, you asked me about football and wrestling and all that stuff. That's one thing I got out of my playing days in high school and college was that, you know, traditionally fight gyms are individualistic as far as, like, the fighter comes in, dictates everything, and leaves. At our gym, they don't dictate anything. You know, our system dictates how we train. Fighters are given a week off after a fight, then they're expected to come back into the gym and help out all the other guys to help them out for their fight. And I know that system isn't for everyone. I know some people got all upset about it, like, hey, man, I shouldn't have to hold pads. It's like, hey, man, well, I shouldn't have to hold pads you either, buddy. So, you know, take it or leave it. But I think it's fostered a tighter-knit group of people here, even for the people that don't fight. When our younger kids go and fight on local shows, there's a big show up of members that go and watch these guys. And we've definitely pushed that family aspect or that teamwork aspect of propelling fighters forward. I mean, so we have a lot of good, strong UFC fighters here, but you'll still see, you know, Alex Perez or Lewis Smoker holding pads for an entry-level guy, you know, just because it's their time to hold them. You know, I know a lot of gyms, people feel that that's beneath them or, you know, I'm so-and-so and everybody should just kiss my ass. And that's not here. Everybody gets along here. And, you know, we keep an air of humility and respect, whether you're, you know, on the top of the food chain or you're an entry-level guy that works hard. You know, we try and keep everyone, you know, on an even keel.
Yeah. I like that aspect. You know, you made a statement that I had seen a while back that not having to deal with egos of international famous athletes isn't the only benefit of working with younger martial artists. And you kind of described that and defined that in the one young man that reinstilled and reinvigorated your thought. You know, when you look at the way you conduct business in your gym, you know, would you say it's more defined on intent and family-based aspects, or would you say it's a structured environment that was defined by you in your teachings?
It's definitely a structured environment that I learned along the way. You know, I think my coaches, you know, growing up, and my trainer, Ichai Sukipo, he showed me a lot of things as well. But I do believe in that tight-knit environment, and I do believe in that teamwork. I think fighters that just go from place to place and burn different bridges, it gets hard to advance your career after a while. You run out of places to burn, you know. I think if you have a solid crew of guys that back each other up, it's definitely a good support system for fighters. Not just in the physical aspect of it, but in the mental aspect of it too, man. You know, the fight life has a lot of ups and downs and stuff, and you know, sometimes coaches can't be there 24/7, but when you got teammates and stuff, you know, everybody can prop each other up, and I think that's important. not everybody's career goes smoothly. You know, not everybody goes 50-0 and never loses a fight. Sometimes you'll lose a couple in a row, you know, and it's good to have the support of your peers to back you up, to ease some of that stuff out. So.
You know, but I'm going to ask you a question. Oh, go ahead,
yep.
Sir.
No, go ahead.
I had Kung Lee on, you know, twice now. The last time he asked to come on the show, he scared me because I know him in life, but he called me up one day and he said, I want to come on the show, but you better bring fire. He said, you better bring the questions. And I was truly scared, I'll be honest with you, because I'm just a humble, you know, chill guy. I'm a guy of the darkness that likes to make others shine. And the first show I had him on, I took him from the fall of Saigon to, you know, him being bullied at 10, 11 years old to him finally finding his way in the martial arts. You know, what is it about you, Coach, that defines you in life? What would you say pride, passion, and perseverance have instilled in you?
I think a certain work ethic and a certain drive, I think, can overcome a lot of things. Even the sports I played, I wasn't the most gifted athlete in the world, but I'll try and outgrind you. And throughout my career, you know, I wasn't blessed with Olympic athletes or, you know, fantastic athletes, you know. Some were good, don't get me wrong. I've had some really good athletes, but I've actually done better with B-level talent that had A-level work ethic, you know. And especially in this day and age, man, I think if you can get athletes that have, you know, at least B-level athletic ability, but a tremendous drive, you can actually get them pretty far. Versus the trend that I see now is you see a lot of A-level talent that have C-level work ethics. You know, they're so used to having everything just handed to them that when push comes to shove, it's like, you know, they start crying and stuff. And that's what I was going through a few years back. And not all of them. You know, I had a lot of good fighters in the past, so don't get me wrong. A lot of them worked hard too, so I shouldn't have let them all together. It was just a trend that I was seeing and where I was going, and I had to turn that around. So but the one thing that defines me, man, I'll take B-level talent with A-level work ethic over an A-level talented guy with crappy work ethic. I don't care how talented you are, man. If you're a pain in my ass, I'm not going to deal with you.
That's tremendous. You know, the one thing I always love about you and all your pictures, you always have a smile on your face, and you know, you're not one for recognition, but you're known for always being the guy with a smile on his face and the guy with the greatest intent. What does it mean for you now to finally see the true fruits of your labor from these hardworking, you know, athletes that have come to you now making success and finding their way in the UFC?
Honestly, man, I get a kick more out of, like, you know, for example, you get a kid out of Peru who's, you know, doesn't got a whole lot going for him, but, you know, he's willing to leave everything behind and come here. Or, you know, I've got a kid from Mexico. This kid worked his ass off in America for 3 years, paid for his own P visa. I mean, he did this all on his own, man. This guy paid for his own P visa, did all the legal things to get here. And I'm talking about a fighter that sacrificed all that just to get a work visa, just so he could fight here. And I'm, you know, I'll gladly help a kid like that. You know, that a guy that's that motivated, it's like, hey, man, you've come this far, you know, to try and get you to the next level. Hey, man, it'd be great to help him out. You know, I feel good helping a guy like that out. Or, you know, 17-year-old kid from Japan that's leaving his mom behind and, you know, wants to make it here, cleans the gym, you know, wipes the mat, does those type of things. One of 9 kids from up north, you know, single mom, raised all these kids. You know, this guy trying to make it happen, you know, leaving a small town, coming to Southern California, getting into the UFC. I mean, those type of stories, I think, you know, they make my day now. They definitely make the career worthwhile when you can see these guys that basically have nothing. You know, I got a Brazilian guy in Sao Paulo working in construction, and we were able to call him and tell him, hey, man, the UFC just signed you. And you know, we're FaceTiming this guy, and he's got a hard hat on and dirt all over his face, you know, because he's been working construction all damn day long. Every day, you know, guy gets up early in the morning, trains, goes to work, saves up his money, comes out here to train, goes back home. And, know, seeing the look on that kid's face in Brazil that he had finally made the big show, you know, and that made my day. That made my year, actually. That happened a couple of weeks ago. You know, and the funny thing is after he fought in Argentina, the guy went right back to work, put his hard hat back on, you know, and I have a lot of respect for guys like that.
Yeah, so do I. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm going to tell you a real quick little story, if you don't mind. There was a promotion out of Michigan called KOP, and I was contacted by a lot of fighters with inter-office memos of racism and things of this nature. And I've never been a journalist that, you know, is afraid to go against the grain. You know, I broke the Joe Torres story, the MMA fighter that was being tried for murder. You know, I've done multitudes of things in my life, but I took up this promotion in Michigan, and I sat back and I took all the hate, I took all the animosity that came with it, but there was this one young kid by the name of Reese Archer. He did a live feed, and he thanked me and apologized on behalf of the state of Michigan. And something about this kid, you know, like the young gentleman that you were talking about, It stuck in my heart because I used to manage fighters. I still broker deals and do things like that. But this kid just kept sticking in my heart. So I decided to do a live feed with him. And after the live feed, I sat back that night and I realized that I took the only promotion out that these kids had to fight in. And this kid had found a place in my heart. So I realized I needed to do something for him. And me and Antonio McKee are really good friends. We've been friends for quite a long time. So I reached out to Coach, and I got this kid out there at the body shop in Long Beach. And you talk about people leaving their families behind, you know, people coming from single-parent homes. This kid truly left his whole life, the only life he ever knew in Michigan, to go out to California. And he did that just maybe 34 days ago. And it truly is instrumental because now the kid has found himself. What does it mean for you when you sit back at home, not as the coach, but as the man, when you sit back and you look at all the aspects and variables that you've changed in people's life, you know, what does it make you feel as a man knowing that you truly are making a difference?
I think sometimes we get so caught up in things. You forget, you know, those aspects. I think people like you, or even my peers here, will ask me that sometimes. I'll kind of sit and think about it like, dang, I guess we did do that, you know. I was in Argentina, then I was in China, then I was in Vegas, and now I'm going to Hawaii. And sometimes when you just do that nonstop, you don't really take the time to sit back actually and look at the bigger picture as far as, you know, fighting and the fighting aspects on life, I guess. You know, we just look at it as fighting for the sake of fighting and careers and business, but we don't always have the time to sit back and look at how is you know, these athletes' lives change from us, you know, training them and trying to get them to another level. But every so often I'll sit back and look at it, or, you know, see what some of these guys have accomplished, or they'll send me a letter or something saying thanks. And then, you know, I think, you know, that kind of, like, reminds me again, like, hey, you know, it's not just about wins and losses, but, you know, we are having a positive effect on people's lives. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, sometimes we're so busy here, I forget myself, you know. But we definitely have some slow times where we can kind of reflect on that and look back at some of the careers over the past 20 years. And, yeah, it's been great, man, for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because Joe and Ron had talked, and, you know, me and you are friends on social media, and I have known that, and I've always wanted to ask you to come on the show, but I'm not that, I'm the old school mentality. I do things protocol wise, and sometimes I get too humbled, because what you've left in this sport and what you've done in this sport is tremendous. But talking with you, you're no different than the average person that truly loves this sport. You know, I'm going to ask you kind of a Barbara Walters question. They already called me the Barbara Walters of MMA, if you haven't figured that out already. But I'm going to ask you a Barbara Walters question, because I would truly like to know, you know, there's many chapters to the life of you, Coach. But if you had to say, you know, tomorrow was a new chapter, and you had to write down a paraphrase of what your thoughts would be going into this new chapter or what you've taken away from the last, what would that paraphrase be?
That's a good one. The thing I tell these guys is like, you know, you're already going to embark on something that's completely different than most occupations. That's not like going to school and becoming a stockbroker or a doctor or something. I mean, getting into the fight world is definitely different. But if you're going to do something like this, go all in, man. Don't half-ass it. And I think the thing that I'm trying to push for the future with some of these young guys is that put everything on the table. You know, go all in. Don't put one foot in the door, one foot out. So far, a lot of those guys have done that. And we've had a lot of success over the past 2 years. I mean, we've gotten a lot of guys into the big show and more on the way. We've recruited some really good kids. And I think, you know, just that self-belief, giving people the self-belief. And, you know, I had to find that myself, man. A couple years back, I was like, man, do I still got this or not, man? Because, you know, things don't seem to be going well. I'm not having a good time. So I started to doubt myself, too. Like, man, do I still got this? Is the sport passing me by? Mentally, I didn't think it did. It's like, man, I don't think it did. But, you know, sometimes you got to tell yourself, too, man, hey, go all out and just, you know, dare to be legendary, man. Don't dare to be ordinary, right? You know, if you're going to do this, man, you know, aim for the top, man. You know, and that's what I like to instill on these guys, is aim to be the best.
I love that because, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about 10 weeks ago. I'm an amputee. I have my left leg gone below the knee. And in the middle of the night, I got up to go to the restroom, and I stepped on the liner that goes on my prosthetic. I pulled kind of a rookie move, you know, and I fell forward, and I hit my head on the dresser. I hit my stump on the ground, and I flipped over, and I slammed my foot on the wood floor, and I broke it in four places. And about 8 weeks in, it just felt like the world was caving in on me, you know, and I don't know what made me do it, but I felt myself self-reflecting if what I was truly doing in the sport was making a difference. Did I truly belong in the sport? Was I truly changing people's lives? And I started doubting myself. And, you know, hearing you, you know, share those words made me realize that, you know, we don't decide when to give up this sport. The sport decides when to give up us. And, you know, you truly made a pure impact on everybody that you touch. You know, when I posted last night that you were going to be on the show today, my inbox was full from a bunch of young fighters from across the country that said you were one of the most tremendous coaches they've ever met. And, you know, having you on the show today truly makes me realize that you truly are, because it's not about you. It's not about you. And I try to preach that in this aspect of my show, because a lot of people want to make certain aspects of the sport about them, but through your teachings, it's not about you, it's about your fighters. Who instilled that type of intent or thought in your teachings, sir?
I think the biggest influence on my training system is the guy that trained me. In California, they call him Crew Rex. His Thai name is Vichai. Supkit Pol, he was a Muay Thai fighter from Bangkok. He's a referee now in Southern California. But he was you know, pretty instrumental in training me. And you know, the most important thing I got from him was, like, you know, hey, man, like, you know, more important than your hands or your feet is to think, man. Think about what the hell you're doing. You know, think your way through things. Use your brain when you fight. Be smart. Use your brain when you train fighters. Be smart. Don't train like an orangutan, you know. And, I still talk to him today. I mean, even after all these years, after all these fights, if I have some questions, I'll still call him up sometimes. Like, hey, man, you know, what do you think about this? And know, I think he's been the biggest influence on me as far as, like, you know, use your brain, be smart, think things through, and you know, come up with a plan. And, versus, you know, all the other stuff. I think a lot of guys are guys. Maybe because I suck at technology, so I'm not on Instagram with all the pictures or the selfies and stuff. That's not my thing anyway. But, you know, you got guys showing stuff online. A lot of the fighters will send those things to me just so we can laugh at them. Because half of that stuff's bullshit anyway. I'm like, are you kidding me? But, you know, for me, it's just like, you know, develop the fighter. Try and make sure that they're successful beyond fighting. That's not always guaranteed, but you know, I think if you push them in the right direction, they listen, they can be successful. You know, one of the happiest things for me was one of our girls, Carla Esparza. I think we had a conversation a couple of years ago. I told her about being smart about her money, and doing something with it. Don't just waste her money and be like a lot of other fighters that were broke. We talked about investing in doing wise things, and just a few months ago, she was able to tell me, "Hey, man, you know, I bought my own place. I paid for it in cash. You know, I saved up all my fight winnings, and she bought her own place to live, and she's working on her second place now, so she can rent that one out." You know, stories like that makes me feel good. You know, that kind of made my day. Like, hey, man, that's one person that actually was able to take everything—not just the fighting aspect of it, but just, you know, using your brain, being smart, listening to. So not just what we're saying in the fights, but how to live your life. She said, man, she's got one property paid for. She's got another one on the way, and she has a good plan of her life, what she's going to do after fighting. And that definitely made me feel good.
Most definitely. You know, I know that's an aspect that truly made you feel good, but, you know, Stitch comes on and mutually hosts with me most of the time. You know, he is a sponsor of the show and a brother of mine. And I was interviewing him one time, and I asked him, I said, Jacob, I said, if you had to take one moment that truly touched your heart and made you realize that you've made a difference, what would that moment be? And, you know, he talked about being at O2 Arena at Wembley Stadium, and after the first round, he jumped in there to take care of Klitschko, and he looked at him and he said, "You can call me son." He said, "You know that, Don, a tear ran down my face." If you have to look in the life of Coach Colin Oyama, what moment would you say pretty much curtails you in that aspect?
I think it was getting that kid from up north. He got a win in Contenders, Las Vegas. After his 20th fight, I think, or 21st fight, you know, most guys get into the UFC, they got 10 fights. This guy had to fight 20-some-odd times. And just seeing that small-town kid get that contract and get into the UFC, I know that was a big one for me. And then I think just 2 weeks ago when we were able to call this kid named Anderson in Brazil with his hard hat on and let him know, like, hey, you know, you just got into the big show. And then just to see the face, you know, the expression on his face, like, what, you know, me? Like, yeah, man, you know. And so those two moments, I think I'll remember for a long time.
Yes. You know, Coach, I told you I wouldn't make this interview long because I know you got to get into training and things here shortly, and I know your time is very valuable. You know, first and foremost, what you've done, not just in the sport but in life, is tremendous. The ethic that you hold is very high, and I hold you in high regard. If you had to make a statement about how you'd like to be remembered, Coach, when it's all said and done, what would that statement be, sir?
Maybe I wasn't the smartest guy or whatever, the smartest guy or the best guy, but, you know, I think I made up for that by giving a shit, man. I think a lot of trainers, you know, if you just cared about what you did, you'd be a lot more successful. So sometimes we'll have these small smoker fights and people will see me there and they're like, what are you doing here? I'm like, well, we got this amateur kickboxer kid, but he's going to fight. People going to be there, you know. And I think part of it is just you got to care. You got to care. So after the smoke clears, and no matter what people can say about me, like, you know, man, he gets mad or he cusses you out, whatever. In the end, though, nobody can say I didn't care. No. I care. And if you do that, I think it makes for a better athlete. They understand that, hey, man, you do care about what's going on.
You know, Coach, you truly humble me. You truly do. You know, I've interviewed some of the greatest coaches in this industry, and I'll be completely honest with you. You truly humble me. And, you know, I thought Coach Mark Montoya and Dewey Cooper humbled me, but you truly have amazed me with the heart and the compassion that you show, the aspects that you walk on your path. You know, the sport needs more people like you. You truly have made a difference in many's lives, and I'm truly humbled that you joined the show today. You know, it's a blessing what you're teaching, but it's even more of a blessing of what you're sharing and showing these young fighters with the gratitude and the knowledge that you ascertain. I'm truly humbled you joined the show today, Coach. I'm going to pass the mic to you. And if there's any sponsors, any friends or family, any social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program, the floor is yours, Coach.
Hey, I'm just going to say there's a lot of other trainers out there that don't get a lot of, you know, publicity or a lot of recognition. For all you guys out there, just keep on doing your thing, man, you know, and keep on developing these young guys. Don't get caught up in the whole social media thing about, you know, I got to make videos or all this crap. Just keep doing your job, and your time will come, and your fighters will get there. And I wish the best for everybody, man.
It's tremendous. You know, it truly was an honor for me, Coach, to have you on today. Like I said, we've been friends on Facebook for a while, but I've been so, I'll be honest, I was scared shitless to ask you because I know what you've done, and I know what you've made in the sport, and I'm old school, man. I'm 53 years old, and I was scared to ask you, but I'm glad I finally grew the cojones to do so, because you truly are everything that the sport needs, and you're making a difference. You know, Coach, where can my listeners find you on social media before I let you go, even though I know you don't really care about it?
I'm on Instagram. I tend to post the pictures of our fights that are coming up, and I think I'm on Facebook too. I think might be filled up, but that's pretty much where I'm at. If I don't get back to it right away, it's just because I'm not too good with technology. But I try and respond. If not, our gym's in Irvine, and you know, pretty much find me here 6 days a week. Sometimes seven. So that's where we're
that's
at.
True. You know, Coach Oyama, I truly appreciate you joining my show. I know you took it on a one-day notice of coming on. I hope I gave you a good interview, and I would love to have you back on because there's so many facets to who you are and what you've done in the sport. I would love to share you and your gym even more in the future if you'd allow me. But on that note, thank you so much for coming on. I wish you a tremendous night of training. Thank you for blessing my show and my listeners, sir.
Got it. Thanks for having me, man. Take it easy.
All right. Thank you.
Have a Merry Christmas. All right.
Hey, you have a Merry Christmas too, Coach. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Coach Colin Oyama. Truly humbling, man. You know, I've interviewed some of the greatest coaches in this industry, but none have really ever defined themselves or the aspect of their thoughts like he did, and it truly touched me. You know, that's an amazing man that just got off the interview. You know, I'm going to follow him even more now, because if you heard his main intent, he doesn't care about the huge promotions. He just wants to create greatness in the sport through fighters who want to see greatness in themselves. And that's a tremendous man in my book. On that note, I want to thank Finished MMA, Juan Martinez. I want to thank the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie. You know, truly an organization that gets back tenfold. Cut Man for Hire with Jacob Stitch Duran and Juan Ramirez, and last but not least, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice. You know, my show is about our guest. It's not about hype. It's not about drama. And hopefully you enjoyed the show this evening. I truly did. I enjoyed it myself. So, you know, if you can, download it. The more downloads we get, the more we get played on iHeart next week in succession. Please go and give Coach Ayama's page a like. He truly is a tremendous man. On that note, thank you for listening. Have a good night, and God bless.
You all appreciate it. When I was young, me and my mama had beef. 17 years old, kicked out on the street. Though back at the time, I never thought I'd see a face. Ain't a woman alive that could take my mama's place. Suspended from school, scared to go home. I was the fool with the big boys breaking all the rules. Said tears with my baby sister. Over the years, we was poor than other little kids. And even though we had different daddies, the same drama when things went wrong, we blamed mama. I reminisce on the stress I caused. It was hell, hugging on my mama from a jail cell. And who thinking elementary? Hey, I see the penitentiary one day. Running from the police, that's right. Mama catch me, put a whoop into my backside. And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand, for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man. You always was committed, a poor single mother.